Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff Ricketts, and I'm a grateful Al-Anon member, recovered Al-Anon, and controller, fixer, chaos creator. And tonight I will be talking on the sex inventory or the relationship conduct inventory into action.
Did you want a reminder, Jeff? I'm sorry, I should have asked you that before you started.
Yeah, would you give me like 2 minutes reminder?
Sure,
I'm not sure I'll
we'll
use
do that.
All the time.
Okay, thank
I'm
you.
I'm gonna read a lot tonight. I wasn't expecting to speak on this topic, but it really, whenever I get the cringes, I think go toward that. That's where God wants me to be today, so I can be honest. And honesty is the key to all of it, from what I can tell. I'm going to read the the middle wall of partition. This is Emmett Fox, the middle wall of partition. For he is our peace, who hath made both one and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us. I think that this is not only one of the most beautiful texts in the Bible, but one of the most important also. Yet it is not one of the best known texts. Of course, all good Bible students have read it many times in going through this chapter, but I wonder how many of them have studied and realized the full import of it. I think that very many have read it only perfunctorily and passed on to another verse that seemed better known or more obvious. Yet what statement of truth could be more obvious and more telling if you give your mind to it? Consider what it says. It says that God is our peace, and that we all know that peace of mind. We all know that peace of mind is the most important and the most powerful of all things. It says that he, God, is our peace and not we ourselves. This phrase alone cuts out any personal effort or struggle on our own part, for these are the things that spoil our prayers. As long as we think that we are doing it, that we must struggle to get higher in consciousness and select just the right phrases, and above all, that we must expect to wait until we are much better and have much better, much more understanding, we are likely to wait indefinitely. All these things make us tense and anxious and turn us away from God, and yet this is just what many sincere people do. Next, the verse says that not only are we and God one, all spiritual teachers say that, but that it is he who has made us one and not ourselves as a result of hard work. We are one because that is the nature of being, since he has made us that way. The verse goes on to say that he has broken down the middle wall of partition between us. What could be more graphic or dramatic than this? The inspired writer here uses a figure of speech. He reminds us that when we lose our sense of unity, oh my gosh, my phone is blowing up. When we lose our sense of unity with God, it is exactly as though a wall were built between God and ourselves, or let us say between two people. When that happens, the communication is broken and we are no longer one in consciousness until, of course, the wall is pulled down. But the verse teaches us that it is God who pulls the wall down, and who will doubt that God can do it? Then we will once more experience our contact and our problem will promptly fade out and God's inspiration will come back. In any difficulty, the one important thing is to have the temporary wall of partition pulled down and to let God do it, for only he can. Excuse me one second. I gotta let my wife in and I'll come right back. Yeah. Okay. So we're back. God pulled down that wall of partition. For me, that was before recovery. I just felt like there was something between me and you. And that wall of partition was subtle, but I couldn't crack it on my own power. I just couldn't crack it. And in this book, in this other book, it says here, in the into action part, it says, more than most people, the excitaholic or the chaos creator leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart that he doesn't deserve it. And for me, growing up, alcoholism, I'd heard it in the therapy rooms and in other contexts that adult children of alcoholics are dishonest without knowing it. That just we lie about everything. We're in a constant state of vigilance, so that if you ask us something that's mundane, we just say, no, I don't know. I remembered that. I come from a large family, and so if my parents would ask, where is your sister? I would say, oh, I don't know. I have no idea. Just reflexively. I just didn't. It might be that she was, you know, upstairs in her room, you know, doing her homework, something mundane, this kind of thing. But I noticed that. And I would also say that I just want to say for myself that in terms of the relationship inventory, the conduct in relationships, it starts with sex, meaning our romantic relationships and this kind of thing. But it really is an inventory on conduct in relationships and all relationships. And for me, having grown up alcoholism, I was more of the hero child. And this inventory really, really opened my eyes because I saw how much I really did get out of growing up alcoholism because I was the same one. And so I was never at fault for anything. You know, it was these crazy ass people who I lived with. And so I went into the world with a really heightened sense of my own self and my own, you know, who I was. And this inventory really showed me, really got me down to size, because it showed me the inconsistencies between who I thought I was and what I was actually doing in relationships. It didn't occur to me that when I went to, I'm going to disclose some stuff here. So, burn the tape if it won't work. When I went to college, I proceeded to fall in love and get a girlfriend of, you know, like a serious relationship there. And I had two other girlfriends back home from different places. And, you know, I mean, there's a socially acceptable element to all this where it's like, yeah, I'm a guy and I'm just, you know, I'm grooving around. I had three serious relationships and I had no idea that this might not be healthy, or I just didn't know. And so this would the relationship inventory showed me that this would be repeated when I got out of college, and that when I got into my 20s, that there was a serial bigamy going on with me, trigamy or whatever. And I didn't know it. And then I met the girl of my dreams, who I'm married to now, thank God. And I could see it. I could see it was going that way again. And in 2005, I went through the steps, not in the BBA way, but I went through the steps in an effective way, in this way, with the relationship inventory. And I could see all this on paper, and I was just blown away because I, you know, for me internally, I just felt like I had the most noble character and certainly would never hurt anybody. And at the time too, I was, married, and this was 2005. I was married and having a lot of marital problems, having a lot of intimacy issues, just plain old, good old fashioned intimacy issues. And I had no idea that those things were attached to the conduct in relationships that I had exhibited in the past. And I made amends to those. I call it the triumvirate, the top three women from my past. And my relationship to Mary radically changed. And nobody told me that. Nobody said, hey, you know something? You may be looking in the wrong area, because Mary and I were looking into splitting. We couldn't get along, and we couldn't get together, and we couldn't have sex either. We just didn't get along. And it was sort of the last house on the block. I wanted to work the steps, and I wanted to make a really good go of it. And I made amends to those three, and my relationship to Mary changed. So in all of those areas, and it just was miraculous. And that's where I was hooked into the 12 steps as a way of life, and a particularly the inventory. And then, by the time I got to BBA, where this was going even deeper, looking at motives in relationships, looking at appetites. Like for me, when I could see that first part of the sex inventory, the conduct and relationships inventory, what were my motives for getting involved? When I was really honest, I was incredibly hungry for female attention, and would do anything to get it. And that's how I was oriented, and where power was for me. That was just the thing. And there was never there just wasn't. I guess there was lip service toward wanting to be in a relationship, but I didn't know what that meant, and I didn't know that that meant giving up a lot of my own comfort to be a couple. But that inventory really, really went deeper and deeper. The one we're talking about tonight, I'm gonna just pull it up. A brief history of the relationship. And so when I had done it in 2005, I got some of the grosser handicaps, and I got the big amends out of the way. They were obvious things. Then as I went to deeper into BBA, and I inventoried the current relationship that I had with Mary, I got to see a ton of things too about some of the things that were still going on. And it mostly had to do with honesty. It mostly had to do with being able to be real. And this is my thing. And this is what, you know, we've talked about it. is that the real higher power gift to me has been giving me a measure of who I really am. I was always in a dither, looking on the outside for who I really was. So let me just read to you I couldn't find any of the, I had some really great relationship inventories, and I couldn't find any of them. I found a ton of resentment sheets. I mean, I have resentment sheets all over this place. There are thousands. I must be one of the most resentful people, or was. So what I have here is one of the pages where I took all of the question number nines, like what should I have done instead? And I listed them all out, and that became the basis for my sex ideal. And there's so much in this book. I don't know if I'll get to read it on the sex or relationship inventory that continues to talk about your ideal. And so if you don't have an ideal, and you don't have, if you have a relationship with a higher power, and you're praying that you live up to your ideal, you have to have one first. And this is so brilliant, getting pen to paper, because that's how I am. When I see it in writing, it becomes real. And then I start to manifest it in my life. And I've seen that. So this is what I wrote. This is a few years back. I'm about to commence working on a new relationship inventory that has more to do with work and some of my relationship as an actor and to other actors and things like that. But I'll read this one. This is from the past. I should have ended one relationship before getting into another, or if the case was dating, been honest to the parties involved, trusted others enough to be honest, communicated my needs and desires without making them requirements, respected our commitment, formed my own basis for living spiritually and financially rather than over-reliance on others. Honesty, I wrote, capitalized, should have treated sex more like a give and take, not so demanding and pressuring, not use the person as an emotional dumping ground, not manipulated with my health problems, not taken out my anger so frequently, honest communication, getting to know her emotionally, letting her find sources of support, not put pressure around sex, taken more of a leadership role in solving health and career problems, communicating decisions and sharing in them, been honest, communicating, not rushing sex, and sought help. And so those were from all of the relationship inventories. I pulled the last number, and that became the basis of my ideal. And I'll read that to you. Relationship ideal. So, God, I think you know me pretty well, and that it's taken me a long time to be in a relationship and trust. I want you to take me further in that direction. Show me how to trust Mary enough to be honest with her. Show me how to communicate my needs and desires without making them requirements or demands. Show me how to respect our lifelong commitment to each other. Now that my romantic intentions go only toward Mary, I would like to develop healthy platonic relationships with other women. God, show me how to be the partner you would have me be. Show me how to rely more deeply on you and the better part of me for help spiritually, emotionally, and financially. Show me how to treat my partner as my partner and not a higher power mother figure. Show me how to be loving and honest. Reshape my relationship to sex. Let it be a shared communication, a give and take with no demands, pressures, or expectations. Fun. Show me how to communicate my feelings without dumping my emotions on my wife. Show me how to express anger more constructively. Remove my impulses to take anger out on my loved ones at all, or anybody. Show me how to treat my spouse with respect, letting her pursue her individuality and letting her seek support from her friends. Show me how to accept her love and support, but to depend more singularly on you. Show me how to get to know her emotionally and to communicate and trust that we can work together and make decisions together. Make me ever reliant on your infinite love and power, that my marriage, my wife, me, we are under your protection and direction. So that's a little long-winded, I'd say. But I wanted to be thorough. I really wanted to be thorough. And I started using that inventory. I wrote it. And then my sponsor said, where's the relationship inventory? Oh, is that 2 minutes?
2 minutes, yes.
He said, where is it? And I said, I put it away with the other inventories. And so he suggested that I bring it out and read it in my morning meditation, read it to the higher power, because I'm trying to bring that into my life. And I could say today that there's more. I mean, there's more. I do resentment sheets on Mary all the time. Our marriage is not hard anymore. It's not hard. A lot of things have been restored in a really nice way. I do feel like this is the beginning for me, because this is this honesty thing, and I'm learning it more from living around people like you guys who are really, really honest. It's really the key for me, is that to keep coming back and if I'm not honest, to keep trying again and to brave it a little bit. Just before this call, I went in because Bruno missed his soccer practice. And if he misses practice, he's not going to be in the game on the weekends. And he's really trying to be in the games. And I went in and I said, "You're missing soccer practice. I'm worried you're not going to be in the game on the weekend." And he said, "Get out. I don't want to hear it." And I said, "Maybe we can talk about this another time." "No, I don't want to ever talk about this. Okay, I'll see you later." You know, I'm just saying, you know, let go of the results, but just to be honest with him. So I'm not over here going, "Wonder why, you know, I'm a bad father. I should have said, so." You know, I'm just saying more. And so I love what recovery has given me, and I'm curious to hear what it's given you in the relationship inventory. I'm Jeff. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. That was brilliant. I know that was a little last minute for you. I apologize again for that, but you did smashed it. So thank you very much for speaking to us today. As a reminder, we only record our speaker and not the shares. Another gentle reminder, if you come late in the future, be sure to mute immediately. Otherwise, you may disturb the meditation or the speaker recording. Our sharing time is split into two parts. Anyone who is currently sober, abstinent from their physical craving, and has worked the Big Book Awakening process with the Big Book Awakening Guide sponsor using the BBA workbook up to this step, which again is step four, the sex inventory or topic, can share in the first part of this time.